So this week we are talking about the alchemy of anger and the sorrow that sometimes goes with it. And what do we do? How do we do that, basically? So we're in this series on the hope, the sacred guide to act. I'm sorry, the guide to sacred activism. It's a sacred guide too, but a guide to sacred activism, a book by Andrew Harvey, and study groups are studying it together. And some of you are following along on your own with the discussion questions that are found in your bulletin and the readings each week. And this week, we look at this thing called anger. Immediately, it takes me back to a story of a time when I was with my mom. And I remember exactly where we were because it made such an impression on me. I mean, as an adult, when I go home, you know, she likes me to run errands with her. And so we were at the dry cleaners, one of our many stops. And we were in the car, and I was telling her about something recent that had happened to me and that I was angry, or how I worked through some anger or something like that. And she said, "Oh, you get angry?" "Why, yes, Mother, I do." I said, "I'm sure you do too." She said, "No, I don't think I've ever been angry." And then I got angry. And I said, "Come on, Mom, like, you're a human being. You've had to be angry before." She's like, you know, so I'm like, "You must have been angry before, you know." And she said, "Well, you know, I've been irritated. I've been frustrated." And you know, though, she really is a product of our family and maybe the times that she grew up in. Certainly the way a lot of little girls have been taught, and probably all of us, that it's not okay to be angry. So if you're a good or a nice little girl or boy, you don't get angry, and therefore that might be something you want to just hide from everybody, so much so that you might hide it from your own self. So years later, unbeknownst to me, I was on my first wilderness fast to process this. And in a wilderness fast, you fast for 3 nights typically, and it was the case in this one, from food, shelter, and company. So it's kind of a rigorous practice. Out on a mountain that was kind of desert type of atmosphere. And after a while, you get feeling pretty empty, and the surroundings around you can feel kind of empty and kind of desert scenario. And it's a really, I find to be extremely powerful practice because everything is stripped away, right? And so then whatever is there that wants to be revealed and seen and healed comes up. And in my case, it was the expression and the feeling of anger. And so not only for myself, but for my mother and my grandmother and her mother and her mother and so on, all the way down that maternal line, I felt it for all of us. I mean, I threw rocks and I swore words I've never said before, and I yelled at the top of my lungs and I broke sticks, and wow, it was so exhilarating. And then finally, in the end, you know, I was down on my knees crying a river of tears on that beautiful dry earth, you know, a way of just giving tears back to the earth. Not that that wasn't my point. I was just in my thing, but I noticed that. So it was this beautiful experience of what happens, you know, when we first of all allow ourselves to acknowledge that there is such a thing as anger that all of us are capable of feeling at some time as human beings, a natural part of our emotional makeup. And then the allowing for it, allowing the feeling of it. And then the work that we have to do that the rest of our talk is about is really, how then do we work with it in a skillful way, in a useful way? And alchemy is a part of what comes into that. So we're going to get to that. But as I was thinking about my mom, and I still think about that every so often, and I think of it now with some sadness, you know, and feeling like it truly was like an ancestral line of it's not okay, therefore you do not feel these so-called negative feelings, you know, because nobody else wants to see that or deal with that is sort of the unspoken rule, right? But, you know, I was thinking about my mom saying that. I thought, you know what, even Jesus got angry. You know, there's a couple of episodes in the Bible. They're told in Mark and Matthew and one of them in John. And the two times he was angry that we know of in the canonized scriptures anyway come right in a row. So it was like maybe a couple of bad days. And the first one is he's walking with the disciples and he's really hungry. And up ahead, he sees a tree, a fig tree, and he sees that it's in full leaf. And he is thinking about having some figs. You know, do you ever get like that? You're really hungry and you start to think about what you're going to have and you kind of got it all planned out, right? And then your partner says they want to go for Mexican instead of that thing you were dreaming about. And you go, oh, I was kind of having a, you know, because your mind has created all this, right? So Jesus was thinking about the figs. And so he gets there and he's ready to get some figs. And it wasn't, they weren't ready. There were no figs. It was just leaves, no figs. And so he gets so angry that he curses the fig tree and it immediately withers to the roots. It's not how we normally think of our Jesus, is it? And so the disciples are, of course, all going, what's going on with Jesus, you know, and this tree, holy cow. And so they inquire about it. And I'll tell you in a moment what he said after I tell you about his second experience. He moves on from there and goes to the temple where the temple has, you probably know this story, everybody's sort of shaking their head. So there's all these people who are selling everything under the sun, doves and livestock and all kinds of, and so the temple has turned into this huge marketplace. And if you can imagine a Middle Eastern marketplace, there is a lot of noise going on and deal making and yelling and, you know, there's movement of animals and things and people and it's crowded and it's probably sweaty and some people are probably angry there and everybody's jostling to get their deal. And this is not the temple that Jesus thinks it needs to be. This is not the temple, his Father's house of worship and prayer that he always thought that it could be and should be. And he gets really, really mad. And so he starts turning over all the temple tables and just telling everybody to get out. And he says, it is written. And so he goes back to the Hebrew scriptures to remind them, isn't it written that my house shall be called a house of prayer, and you are making it a den of robbers? So I want to go back, because these two pieces, these two stories are a little different flavor of his expression of anger. The first one, the fig tree, is a little bit more of a, trying to figure that one out, you know? The money changers one I understand more, and we'll go to that. So I'm going to go back and forth for a minute, if you'll bear with me. So when the disciples asked him about the fig tree incident, and they're standing there in amazement at this tree withered to the roots, and they say, wow, you know, what happened here? Look what you've done. Wow, cool, you know? And he says, truly, I tell you, if you say to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, and if you don't doubt it in your heart, but you believe that what you say will come to pass, it will be done for you. So I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and so it will be. So this is a really important teaching, because he's not only talking about the power of prayer, but he's talking about it in terms of a kind of destructive almost way, like getting the obstacles out of the way, right? It's the kind of power that we don't often talk about. When we talk about divine power or God's power, we talk about it in terms of love and kindness and that kind of thing. We don't really talk about the destroyer aspect of God, you know? But if we look at the Hindu Godhead and goddesses, you know, there are three aspects of God. There is a creator, and there is a destroyer as well as a sustainer. And so we have that power available to us to be destructive in some cases and to be creative in some cases. And sometimes those destructive times are what is called for. Dismantling governments sometimes needs to happen, right? I'm not saying, I'm just saying. Or I am saying, I don't know. You'll have to interpret that. But, you know, there are structures that we have, we can stand in a space and say, this is not the way it was intended to be. This is not the way our Constitution was made. This is not the way that the temple was designed. It was a place of prayer, a place of worship. And immediately after Jesus banishes everyone, including all the animals from the temple, he begins to call people in for healing. And so it is that immediate transformation of his anger into a restoration of what is this temple for? And then remember the authorities ask him, you know, he says he can rebuild this temple in 3 days. And they say, 3 days? Are you kidding me? It's taken us years. But he's talking about a couple of different levels. One, the restoration of the temple to its original design, its value, its import. It's a sacred place. He was also referring, and it was kind of a foreshadowing, of the temple of the body and the resurrection process in the 3 days and the rebuilding of and the resurrection of the temple, the body itself. So there's layers, there's always layers in the scriptures. But in this case, in the fig tree, so this case, there's sort of this righteous anger that we can understand, right? It's an act of civil disobedience. But it's an act of civil disobedience with a purpose to restore what is of sacred value. And so sometimes if we don't make those things happen, if we don't use our own dismantling powers in this way, if we don't use our divine power in prayer in this way, it gets done for us, right? It starts to happen for us. And then the question is always, how will I meet this? How will I participate? How will I be a part of that? This is our sacred activism walk. It's to constantly ask ourselves, what is my action to take when I feel this kind of fiery anger? To alchemize it into passion and action that is for the greater good. And that was Jesus' intention with the money changers' tables and the temple scenario. The fig tree, still a little bit of a So here's something he adds to the end of that part where he's giving this lesson to the disciples about the prayer, you know, and the power of prayer to move this mountain into the sea and believe that it can be done. Do not doubt. Whatever it is that you ask for in prayer, believe and it will be done. But then he adds this. Whenever you stand praying, forgive, so that your Father may also forgive your trespasses. So I believe this is a little indirect teaching, which Jesus also does, to say, maybe I was a little harsh on the fig tree. Maybe my anger was a little over the top. Just because I was hungry, it's not the fig tree's fault. And so he's teaching us that when we do use our anger unskillfully, use it in this kind of way that's not so much for the greater good, but out of our own personal frustration, that the best thing we can do in that scenario is ask for forgiveness and forgive ourselves. So when we have done that, when we have used our anger in such a way, that's our course of action. But what we're working with today is more about the back it up a little bit before the anger gets acted upon and allow it to be the fiery, passionate energy that can transform any scenario into love, into peace. But with that kind of power behind it, it's got a whole nother possibility of exponentially reaching out into the world in those concentric circles going beyond, right? You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, who knew from his own direct experience, he's a Vietnamese Buddhist monk, if you're not familiar with him, and he came over with the rest of the refugees on the boat. So he knows the experience of being on the boats. And he said, you know, you can have a boat full of panicked refugees. And if you have one person on that boat who's calm and grounded, the whole boat can shift. The same thing is true of an act of civil disobedience like Jesus had with the money changers' table, is that that one act of passion can start a movement, as people like Martin Luther King did with what he saw as injustice and I'm sure felt angry about, but was able to so eloquently and skillfully work with that within himself and his own prayer time to bring that forth into a movement that caught on across our country and throughout the world. So, Gary McGee wrote an article on anger, and he said, the question to ask when we feel angry is the anger controlling me, which is the reptilian brain, right? That's the fight or flight brain that's reactive and that will tend to spew anger. Or is it the evolving mind? And the evolving mind is when we ourselves are in control of the anger, which again is just energy, and it's powerful energy. So we don't want to repress it. We don't want to ignore it. We don't want to numb ourselves out from it, but we want to look at it, embrace it, breathe into it, transform it, and then share it. That's the alchemical process, yes. I'm making up all kinds of words with this. Alchemize, I'm not sure that that's really a word, but but alchemy is, you know, an ancient science where old common metals would be taken to be transmuted in the fire, and they would be transmuted purportedly into gold. And so that's the work that we do in this transformational process. It's like in this crucible or this cauldron of working with this emotion, we can allow it, that fire of that emotion, to transmute and then to be shared in some other kind of form. McGee goes on to say that there are several different effective ways that we can use our anger, and he suggests things like dance and exercise or making art, poetry, music. I mean, we can actually make something really beautiful and powerful out of the anger that we may feel for various reasons, whether it be for personal reasons or more social reasons. And Fillmore said, Charles Fillmore, one of our co-founders, said, the mind is the crucible where transmutation happens. And the process of transformation is a spiritual chemistry that we must learn. He goes on to say why, and he's talking about in the context of our prosperity. But really, in prosperity can mean everything, right? So it's a spiritual chemistry that we must learn. And anger is one of those, it's like a raw material, you know, that it has so much in it that we can use, but we have to learn. And so what will we do? You know, I know we all get it now, right? Okay, so we want to alchemize and we want to, but how? How do we do this? Because in the moment we feel anger, it's very difficult, isn't it, for some of us anyway, to not be reactive, but instead be in that process, in that crucible of the mind, the heart, the solar plexus, perhaps, and oftentimes a place that people will feel anger, like anger in the belly, literally, that fire in the belly. And so it's that processing of that we're talking about in this alchemy. So how do we do it? Well, one of the ways is through the power of pause. There is a lot. It seems so simple, but there is a lot that can happen when instead of reacting, we just take a minute to pause and to breathe and to maybe count to 10 before we say anything or do anything. Just to make that resolve within ourselves that I will count to 10 or as close to 10 as I can get. And I will breathe before I react so that I may be able to respond. And what is, you know, responsibility, the ability to respond. So to be responsible with this fiery energy. So Thich Nhat Hanh goes on in his book, Anger, to tell about another way in which you can work with this pause a little bit more deeply and lovingly. And he says that if you think about like a mother who's responding to her child, so that the baby is crying, it's hollering, it's suffering. And so what does the mother do? She doesn't ignore the baby, right? She doesn't push the baby away. The mother, who is responsive, goes and embraces the baby, right? And she is a calming force. So he says, the baby needs his mother to embrace him, and you are the mother, and the baby is your anger. And so when we embrace it, that moment we begin, he says, to start breathing like a mother would to calm her child, just very naturally, we would do that, right? So it's the same thing that we're doing with our own anger. It's holding that and breathing with it and embracing it and allowing it, not making it wrong. And then he says that when the mother does that with the baby begins to soften, right? To feel a sense of relief as it feels the breath and the embrace. Or the father who is embracing, doesn't have to be a mother, it can be a father embracing the anger. And he says that the baby feels the relief, and the mother or the father knows instinctively then to, now that the baby is beginning to feel embraced and relieved, to look for the cause of the anger, right? Is the baby hungry? Is his or her diaper too tight? You know, she need a nap, you know? And so we can then ask ourselves the same thing. What's the need underneath the anger? What am I needing? Am I needing community? Am I needing connection right now? Am I needing expression? Am I needing some time by myself, some autonomy? Am I needing, you know, what is it? You can fill in the blanks. It could be 100 things. Am I needing relaxation? Am I needing some clarity? Am I needing some guidance, some help? Some recognition, some appreciation. Could be any of those things and many, many more. Only we will know what our own baby is needing. But that's the work to help to slow it down and to see what's here so that we can really use that energy in a productive way. Khalil Gibran, the poet, said, "And God said, love your enemy. And so I obeyed and loved myself." That's really what it's about, isn't it? That walk of self-love. Because when we do that, then we can love everyone with such ease. So when anger is pushed outward, as in expressing it through actions that are angry or words that are angry, sort of that spewing outward, That's the expression of anger, the feeling of anger being expressed. But when it is turned inward, it becomes depression. And so depression then can become that sort of flatlined, removed, disassociated, numbed feeling. And somewhere in between, if somebody emerges from depression, they begin to feel again, what's there? Sadness, right? And the sadness allows some release, because crying happens naturally when we feel sad. And the same with the anger, when you reel that back and you really take a look and you hold that anger and you realize there's some sadness here. Almost always there's sorrow underneath the anger. And so that's where it meets, no matter whether we're turning it outward or turning it inward. But either way, we don't really want it to go too far inward or too far outward without some skillful means of really looking, embracing, allowing, and then the transformation can really begin. Marianne Williamson said about 30 years ago, I heard her speak for the first time, and I remember clearly her saying, look about the world and see what depresses you. And then allow that to be the thing that you work to eradicate. And that's a perfect example of sacred action in process. So look at what makes you angry or what saddens you, and then turn it around by working to eradicate that thing. That's sacred activism at work. So the other thing that we can do besides working with our own selves is, and as we work with our own selves more effectively, is when there's anger around us, we can get much more skillful at being an alchemist with the anger around us. So I read this story from the Iraq War in 2005 that a reporter wrote in The New Yorker. And he said during that time, in fact, specifically it was April 3rd, that he was watching the news pretty much 24/7. He'd have CNN on with the volume turned down. And he said, one day I looked up and I saw this scene and I couldn't believe it. He said a small group of American soldiers, this was about the time we were getting closer to Baghdad, were walking down the streets in Iraq and Baghdad. And all of a sudden, he said, hundreds of Iraqis started streaming out. Then he couldn't hear, the sound wasn't on at the time, but he just saw fists flailing and all this sort of like angry expression. And he saw the American soldiers sort of looking at each other, confused and terror on their faces. And more of these guys, and maybe women too, I don't know, were pouring out. And so he turned the volume up and he said they were just yelling all kinds of stuff. And it was just like complete mayhem. And so it was like, what is going to happen here? He said that just the escalation of the stress and the fear that there's going to be some crazy mass murdering thing happen right now. And this lieutenant walks in to the middle of the space and he puts his rifle face down up in the air so that the nose is face down. And he says to his soldiers, take a knee. And so they all turn their rifles upside down and take a knee and put their rifles so the barrel is down on the ground. And he said they sort of wobbled in their armor to get down. But once every rifle was face down and they were all on their knees, the whole scene went calm. Complete silence. It was over. And everybody dispersed. Now this reporter from The New Yorker thought, I want to know what this lieutenant knew. What did he know about that tribal culture? How did he know how to do that? What made him think that? How did he know that that gesture would translate like that? He said it took him 2 months to track the lieutenant down because he had already come back to the States and he was living in Iowa. And when they had a conversation and he asked him, fired out all these questions, the lieutenant said, nobody taught me that. I don't know. He said, I knew that the Iraqis were angry because they felt we were disrespecting their mosques. And so I knew we need to show respect. And so that simple gesture of respect and honor diffused the entire situation. And so as we become more and more skillful with this powerful emotion of anger, we can, and it's important in these times because you know, not to be scary, but it's reality. There's a lot of stuff going on in our world, right? So for us to be prepared and alert when we're out and about, to be able to be that kind of conduit for spirit that can hear and know what is the need here where this anger or this hatred is present. And probably a lot of times signs of honor and respect would be a good place to start. But whatever it is, that we'll have a sense of the alchemy of that moment. So I want to close out with one final story. My goddaughter Grace moved in this week, and all of us took a walk in the neighborhood, and we came across there's a bunch of, you'll see them actually if you go down Geary, just past Buena Vista, the house on the right, there's a huge dragon in the driveway, along with other things, tarantulas and other cool Halloween decorations. But this dragon is really big. I mean, and she's, you know, four. And she was so brave. She wanted to go up with me, but she's a little bit, you know, not sure, you know, is this thing real? It had fire, it had red lights in its belly moving around, and it had the fire coming out of its mouth, and it had red eyes and the big wings. And so we got close, and together we touched the claw, and it was like, oh, it's actually kind of soft. She said, oh, yeah, it is kind of soft. I said, you want to touch the belly and see if that's hot? So, of course, I had to touch it first, but then when she saw it was okay, she touched it. She said, oh, yes, it's not hot. And then she looked up at it, and she said, these big, beady red eyes, and she said, he's looking at us. And then she said, can we take him home? And that, my friends, is how to deal with anger. Make friends, take it home, breathe, pause, Allow yourself to be with it, and then you'll know. You'll be able to use the power of the dragon. That sounds pretty fun, doesn't it? So in this crucible of our evolving, ever-evolving minds, we will continue to use this very powerful emotion of anger for passion, for greater good, for sacred service. Let's close out together with this affirmation. Together, I am alchemizing anger and sorrow into powerful healing action. So it is.